Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the After Show with Mike and Kelly. I am your host, Michael Rose, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in podcasting crime, Ms. Kelly Guimont.
Hi.
How's it going, Kelly?
You know, I'm not sure, honestly, because halfway through the intro music, I went, now I figured out what it is about the intro music. I always expect Good Charlotte to start singing. And then I was wondering, because we're going into this like ice cold. We didn't talk about what we're going to talk about or anything.
Cold. Nothing.
And I was like, am I doing the intro? Is it my turn? I was having like so many thoughts all at the same time, and all of that in less time than it took to play the theme song.
So. It's amazing how quickly the brain can work under pressure. So
really is.
It's March 16th, 2016.
Indeed.
So happy belated Ides of March.
We hope you survived them.
We hope you survived them unstabbed, as all of our listeners should be unstabbed. We you know, last week we talked about one of the new tools we're using. New tools. We're all about the tools. Last week it was Loopback from Rogue Amoeba. So through courtesy of Loopback, we were able to play our theme music right in line with the recording. And we are also using something very different to record this week's show. Very, very different. The traditional method is a Skype double ender, which is not a form of sporting equipment, not a particular brand of badminton, shuttlecock. The Skype double ender, but it's usually each of us talking on one end of a Skype conversation, recording that locally using Call Recorder from Ecamm, and then one of us, me, usually editing those together. We're doing something different. We're using a website, one of them newfangled web applications called Zencastr, Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R, without the E.
They've dropped a vowel in true web 2.0 fashion.
They have dropped the E. And we'll see how this goes. It's supposed to be doing the magical double ending stuff for us. And I can see the audio recording beginning to creep across the screen here. So, and it gives us a little chat and everything. So it's in beta. We're trying it out and we'll see what happens. It is
so far. It's awesome.
So far, so good. It is a podcasting experiment and you are part of it. So Kelly, how you doing? What's going on? It's been a while.
Yeah. So before we get too far down, I just want to say listeners, cause I know there's, at least two of you. Mike, you will have to confirm whether or not Javi is actually listening, but I know that we do have at least, my friend, Jonathan, who is totally listening. Hi, Info Driveway. And I know that Chris Fuller is listening. So hi, Chris Fuller. And if you will confess in public to listening to our show, I'll say hi to you too. And I know that at least the two of you are going to be listening. So if you notice that the quality is dramatically different, whether it's good or bad, with this episode compared to the rest once we get this one online, please let us know. And anyone else who's listening, please also let us know as well, because we're very curious how this stacks up to the workflow we are usually using. Because this might be a lot more convenient. So there you go.
Excellent. Excellent point.
Otherwise, I have to say I was almost disappointed that we were recording tonight, because I just want to go keep watching the new Apple ad starring Cookie Monster over and over and over again.
It is the thing that we are the most excited about. What are you most excited about today?
It is glorious. It's funny. It's clever.
It's so good.
It's everything I expect from an Apple ad. It shows somebody actually using a feature of an Apple product in a very everyday sort of way. And it features Cookie Monster being exactly as Cookie Monster-y as Cookie Monster has ever been. And it's two great tastes that taste great together. Like it really is. And it's an official ad. I thought maybe somebody was being clever.
Oh my God. It would have been so like HBO and CTW to completely punk us.
Which is exactly what I figured, that this was going to be, you know, game of chairs or some of the other devastatingly clever stuff that we've seen from the workshop. Which is always very, very funny. If you haven't had an opportunity to see any of the stuff that they do with the parodies now on Sesame Street, you should totally watch, because they're very funny.
The Cookie Monster Call Me Maybe parody.
That was
thing of beauty.
That was amazing. But like the Game of Thrones one is, the Game of Chairs one is very funny. They're all in a castle and they're playing musical chairs, and it just shows a variety of Muppets playing musical chairs. And then at one point, one of them says, "Can we hurry this along? I have a wedding to get to." And right. So funny. So yeah, all of the stuff that they do is very clever. And I figured, you know, with HBO getting in cahoots with them, those were things that I figured would be, I was like, oh, well, this is just them. You know, it's not going to be an iPhone. It's going to be an e-phone or whatever is the letter of the day or something. And then Cookie Monster starts talking to Siri, and it's amazing.
Set timer. Siri. Hey, Siri, set timer for 15 minutes.
I love it.
Okay, Cookie, your timer set for 15 minutes.
Play waiting playlist.
Hey Siri, play waiting playlist. So apparently, just for the record, my Cookie Monster impression and my Triumph the Insult comic dog impression.
Okay.
Painfully similar.
I was gonna go with
so Bonderland. Are you birthing a baby nerd? Are those cookies in the oven for me?
He just did a special for Funny or Die, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Smigel.
Covering politics.
Yeah, talking to young voters. Oh my God. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Triumph the Insult Comic Dog talks to young voters, if you haven't seen that. And Triumph is your thing. Like, this is, I mean, in the middle, it reaches peak Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. So if you've ever watched that and been not impressed, this will not impress you either.
I like the way you put that. I really like the way you phrased it. If you've ever not enjoyed Triumph the Insult Comic, if you've ever been not impressed, this will not impress you. I like
no,
that.
No, it absolutely will not. I do have to say, because we let's just talk about stuff that we are enjoying and liking. There's a new show on the History Channel called Join or Die with Craig Ferguson.
Mm.
And I am a longtime, very public fan of Craig Ferguson. I adore him. I think he's tremendous. He's very clever. He's very funny. And he's painfully self-aware. So he does have that going for him. When he used to have the show that was on after David Letterman at 12:30 on CBS. And the great thing about his show was that he always referred to himself as, he would say he was a vulgar late night entertainer or a vulgar lounge entertainer, things like that. But, you know, he was never secret about like really liking stuff. So like when he had Grant Imahara on from Mythbusters, he was like genuinely excited to have him on. And when he had guests from Doctor Who, he was always super, super excited about it. So anyway, he doesn't do that show anymore. He does a new show on the History Channel called Join or Die. And they talk about history's various things. So one of them was history's greatest blunder. There was history's greatest tyrant, I think, was one of them. History's greatest doomed presidential campaign. That was a good one. And so then he has some comedians on. He usually has like three guests. One's a historian, and then the other two are just comedians. And then they have like a selection to choose from, and they have to eliminate. They talk about, you know, like the six of them that they have to choose from, and then they figure out who they're going to eliminate. And then the audience ultimately makes the decision. It is super fun. And the best thing about it is that basically everybody's out of their element, because whichever history professor or author or whoever the smarty pants person is that's on the panel, and they all have amazing cred, by the way, whoever that person is sitting with two other funny people and Craig Ferguson. And so this person's kind of out of their element. They probably don't do this very often. And the comedians who are on are not doing their regular stand-up thing or playing the regular character they normally play or anything like that. So they're kind of out of their element too. And it is super fun to watch. And like it's not all, you know, peak hilarity, but it's really entertaining. It's half an hour. It's a lot of fun to watch. And it's something that I've been enjoying very much. So that's what I'm into at the moment.
I think that is definitely worth calling out. Speaking of pop culture news, and since you mentioned
this is something I'm pretty sure I'm going to like watching.
Yeah, friend of the show. It's just not out yet. Friend of the show, Javier Grigio Marxwatch, the executive and executive producer of the upcoming Xena reboot. Javi had a rough past couple weeks. The background on that is that one of the show he currently works on, The 100. Unfortunately, there was a performer, an actor, woman actor who is leaving the show because she had another role on, I believe, Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Her character was involved in a same-sex relationship, another woman on the show. And the character was killed off in a fashion that was apparently reminiscent of another well-known genre lesbian girlfriend actress show removal, that being Tara from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, okay.
Willow's girlfriend who was shot as an innocent bystander, and apparently the same thing happened to this character.
Injury, the way I understand it with this character on the 100, was that basically this relationship had just gotten together.
Yeah, I don't watch the 100, so I can't really speak to what the character arc was.
Well, I went and found out about it later because, like, I rolled into Twitter one morning while I was eating breakfast and saw, like, it was pretty clear
blood on the
walls. Something was hitting the fan left, right, and center, and wow! And then I saw that it was a lot of it was Javi, and so like we're buds. I just call him Javi. I went and looked for what it was that had happened, and I found one place that was less shouting and hand waving and wailing and gnashing of teeth, that talked about what had happened and said part of the reason that it was sort of extra brutal, I guess, that this character had been lost this way, was that they had just gotten together. There was like no moment of them being happy or anything, and it was like all of a sudden cut off in the middle.
Yeah, and it was harsh, and it was difficult for the fans. It was difficult for the creators.
Yeah,
but I don't think the creative team and Javi in particular understood before it happened exactly the depth of feeling that it would endanger. So Javi spent a lot of time on Tumblr, not only responding to people directly and trying to understand where they were coming from, but also republishing and sharing some of the feedback he was getting, which was which was pretty raw.
Yeah.
So all of that as context, not easy for anybody, certainly not what everybody expected to spend their weekend doing, but it was a couple weeks ago. So subsequent to that, he was involved in a Tumblr Q&A, and in a somewhat elliptical fashion, pretty much came out and said that in the Xena reboot, the Xena and Gabrielle characters, which were heavy on the subtext, shall we say, in the original series, but were never explicitly called out as a couple, a lesbian couple in the show, that is going to be not so much subtext as text in the reboot, that the Xena and Gabrielle will be gay in the show. And this is exciting. The fact that this is now in The Guardian in the UK.
Yes.
I find somewhat hilarious and bizarre, but it's great because I think this is while I don't necessarily, and I don't think it's fair to point to one as a consequence of the other. I think they're independent, and this would have happened regardless. I think it is in some way a demonstration of the fact that Javi is aware of the concerns of the fan community around this issue, around the representation of same-sex couples, and he was gonna do the right thing by the characters anyway, but now it carries a little bit more freight because he's obviously just been through, and the fans have all been through this experience on the 100,
right,
where it is very clear that these portrayals and these characters have a lot of importance, and they have a lot of importance for fans. They have a lot of importance for people who don't necessarily see themselves reflected in characters on television.
Yes,
and so this is an interesting thing. It's a good thing, and it's something that I think he is well sensitized to take on at this point.
Yeah,
shall we say?
Yeah.
So
and I thought the thing to me about the work that I've seen from Javi, because he worked on Lost and he worked on some of the things, is always seems pretty thoughtful to me. It doesn't seem like somebody, he doesn't strike me as a person who would go, well, let's just kill that character. You know, like, yeah. Like there's more.
He's not Joss Whedon, for God's sake. Yeah. We love you, Joss. Don't ever change. But you have a little bit of a reputation.
You don't need to follow George R. R. Martin quite that closely. Okay. Like, you really don't. So I was excited to hear that he was going to be working on Xena in the first place. And then to find out that they were going to take away all the subtext of it, like, was funny to me, because I saw there was some conversation somebody was having where they had made some sort of like vague reference in a tweet. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they said, oh, guys complaining that Xena is going to obviously be with Gabrielle. Like, wait a minute. I thought that's why guys were watching. was that not a thing? Because I really thought that's the only reason any dude ever watched that show. And clearly I was mistaken. So so we've all learned something. But I'm excited about it because I like that it doesn't necessarily have to be coy. But I was always impressed in my estimation, because I was still I was not too far removed from the wilderness at that point. When Xena was on the air, that they got away with as much as I thought that they really got away with, I guess is
yeah.
Like, and maybe that's just because like I wasn't really looking for it, but I knew a lot of people in same sex relationships, both guys and girls. And so it never occurred to me that it would be a thing that would just be absolutely scandalous, you know?
True.
Like, you know, just. But it's the same sort of thing as like people, you know, like Nathan Lane still having to come out and admit that he's gay. Like, there's somebody somewhere, you know, whose world was rocked by that, I'm sure.
Really? I'm okay.
Sure. Yes. I called it the duh heard round the world, but I'm sure there was like somebody someplace who just was, you know, fainted dead away when he appeared on the cover of People, you know. Like, I just thought he hadn't found the right girl. Like, you know, I'm sure there was somebody.
There was someone out there for him. I mean the depths of people's unawareness never cease to amaze me. But you know, well, it's been a couple weeks since we chatted. So there's, in addition to Cookie Monster and Xena, there's other things going.
Other thing going on. Speaking of people's unawareness,
yes,
something a lot of people didn't know about, and have to. The thing about this whole thing to me is, and we'll tell you what we're talking about in a minute. To me, the thing about it is, I think this is something that a lot of people at some point their opinion was formed, or they thought they knew all they needed to know and just left it at that. And that assessment never changed. And now I think everybody's assessment is changing. And what we're talking about here is the FBI and Apple going toe to toe.
Yep. And it continues. It continues to this moment.
Yes. And can I just point out that I kind of have a nerd crush on Apple's lawyers right now, having read the highlights of the filing. It warms my heart to know I live in a world where that legal document exists. Let me just put it that way.
Well, why don't you share your impressions of where Apple's going with this? Because I mean, I have my sense of what is the right thing to do and what should happen. And I've had a number of arguments or discussions with people about what I think is going on, but I'm curious for your take.
Well, the first thing I thought, when I first heard this, that, the FBI, cause the initial story that we heard was, the FBI is telling Apple they have to crack this phone. So you're going to hear people say hack. Hack is not what they're doing. The textbook, I know it's not in a textbook, but the textbook definition of hacker is to use something for any purpose other than its intended purpose. So when I twist up my hair and I take a pencil and I stick it through to hold my hair up in a bun, that's me hacking the use of a pencil, which is normally used for writing a letter. So hacking is like when you use, you know, a particular program to get into a different program when it's supposed to be used for word processing or throwing birds at pigs or whatever. So that's the difference. Cracking is when you gain unauthorized entry to something that you that isn't yours, basically. So burglars are crackers. That's what it is. Cracking is getting into something that you shouldn't be getting into. So they asked Apple to crack into this phone. And my first thought was, I don't know if Apple can, because Apple has made a point the last few times that anyone has been on stage at an Apple event, whenever anything involving personal information or personal data or anything like that has come up, it's always been hands off. Whoever's on stage is standing there telling you, we don't know any of that information and we are proud to admit it. We don't know it, we don't have it, and we don't want it. So there's a certain amount of that I saw in the first place. So my first thought was, I'm not sure that what they want to do is even possible.
Well, and with the current state, with iOS built the way it is, and mm-hmm. With the currently available tools, it's not.
Right.
The data on the phone is encrypted. It is not possible. What the FBI wants to do is have a way to basically crack in via the passcode. Mm-hmm. And so what they originally asked for was, give us a version of iOS that lets us try passcodes over Wi-Fi or over Bluetooth unlimitedly. Yeah. And we'll figure out what it is. And, right. And Apple's basically saying with stock iOS, that's not possible.
Yes.
If you try to compel us to write a new version of iOS, and you, by the way, for just this one phone is a little bit of a canard because, why wouldn't it run on other phones?
But if you try to compel
us to write a new version of iOS for this phone, you're compelling speech.
Yes.
And that's where,
not a thing.
And that's not a thing. And it gets very interesting because the government could theoretically compel people who make other products. Like, for example, the government can compel car companies to include seatbelts.
Yes.
So there are product design considerations for safety or for security that, and in fact, historically, with regard to the telephone system, the government could compel the phone companies to engineer them in such a way mm-hmm. that it was possible to do wiretaps. This mm-hmm. was a thing.
Yes.
But the difference, there is a fascinating difference between engineering and code.
Yes.
In that code legally, based on case law, has the protections of speech.
So you may remember a few years ago, I want to say it's been about 10 years now. There were people who would wear t-shirts with code printed on it.
Oh, yes. DCSS.
And, yeah. And that was called DCSS, which is D-E-C-S-S. You can look up the entire history of the thing on Wikipedia if you really want to. The reason that that's interesting is because that's one of the cases that was considered free speech that they used to sort of help draw and enforce this line and make it very clear. Yeah. And
which is fascinating because those shirts, the reason those shirts were problematic is that the CSS protections were copy protection for DVDs.
Yeah.
So if you put a DVD in your Mac today, there's actually hardware decoding or software decoding, but there's license decoding that takes place to allow you to show that video. Mm-hmm. If you use something like Handbrake or VLC, mm-hmm. they're not licensed. They're using code, reverse engineered code, but the DCSS code mm-hmm. to show you the video. That process was illegal, but the code to do so, written, if memory serves, in Perl, on a t-shirt is speech, even though it represents something that should legally not exist.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yes. And because I feel like this doesn't get said nearly enough, so I want to make sure we say it, we're going to talk about speech just for a second. So when people talk about First Amendment rights, No, let me take that back. When people wave their hands and screech about First Amendment rights, what they think they mean, the people who are yelling the loudest about this are usually yelling about consequences. You are stepping on my First Amendment rights. I have the freedom of speech. Now, here's what freedom of speech actually means. It means two very interesting things. First of all, it means freedom from speaking. You cannot be compelled
by the government.
Let me underline that. By the government to say something or let them know the thing that you know or anything like that. You are absolutely under no circumstances obligated by the law because of the First Amendment. The First Amendment means if you go out and say something dumb, the government can't put you in jail for that. If it's dumb and if it's not insightful, like incitement. Yes. What do you call it when you're trying to incite people?
Incitement.
Incitement. Okay. So it's not, if you are inciting people, that's not protected. But protected speech means the government won't come get you. It doesn't mean if you go out and say stupid things that you won't lose friends, that you won't lose your job, that you will be kicked out of the bar for saying whatever it was you said. All of those things are entirely possible. What you are free from is the government putting you in jail. You are not free from consequence. So
well,
say something dumb.
Consequences from a private entity, yeah, or from your employer or from your, right, friends or from your church or from whatever.
Yes.
Congress and by extension state and federal government can't outlaw your speech.
Right.
But that doesn't mean, yeah, like you said, that doesn't mean free speech is freedom from consequences.
Right. And I feel like enough people don't appreciate that distinction, and there's no room for nuance in anything anymore. And I really want to make sure that that doesn't sound nuanced at all, because it isn't. So there you have it. Yeah. So there it is. I just want to make sure that we talk about that, because nobody else ever talks about that. They just bandy about First Amendment rights, First Amendment, First Amendment. And that's not necessarily the thing that they're actually talking about. What they're trying to say is, I should get to keep my job even though I said this horrible thing about my boss. Or better, you know, my boss's spouse. So, yeah, that's not a thing. So, it's been interesting to see how basically America has been parted out, you know, on which side or the other of this whole Apple FBI thing they've been on. Almost immediately, the mother of one of the people who actually died in San Bernardino came out and said, Apple shouldn't have to do this. The FBI has no business getting into everybody's phone. And the thing that a lot of people are trying to, I think the people on the side of the FBI who are trying to hush it up, who are trying to get into the phone, are trying to hush up the fact that if you talk about this realistically, you know, in the real world, not in whatever world the FBI is trying to make this happen, in my estimation, in real life, the way this actually works is if this ever gets created and ever exists, it will work everywhere. It will not go away. It will exist in perpetuity. It will continue to be a thing. And I've seen person after person talk about, I worked on a security thing, or I built this tool to help collect data about criminals, or I wrote this program to help intercept emails, or whatever it was. Like, I've seen a whole bunch of these stories about all different kinds of things that law enforcement uses for bad guys. And every single one of them was like, you know, I went back a month later to make sure everything was working, and they had all used it on their girlfriends. You know, they all used it on their buddies. They all used it on, you know, their wives, whatever. And that's the thing that I'm concerned about, is that if this ever exists, we're all stuck. And that's the thing that Apple keeps trying to say, is that, you know, if we build a door for anybody, we build a door for anybody.
Yeah, especially in a week where there's a man in the middle attack on the App Store in China.
Yep.
you know, nobody's nerfed, as they say. And Apple is not only actively trying to push back against this and with some political and legal effect, but is also doing what it can to aggressively ramp up the hardening of encryption on other parts of the ecosystem, specifically iCloud. Encrypting user data in iCloud is a hard problem because one of the things you like to be able to do things like allow people to preview their files in web browsers and be able to search or to sort and do other things that it's hard to do on encrypted data when the process that's doing the sorting or the searching can't see the clear text. It has to work off something tokenized or something that is order preserving tokenization. And there's lots of complicated math involved. There's an interesting
security. Anything tends security to be anything a big, it tends to be a really big brain issue. And if you ever sit and spend 15 minutes talking to a security person, I think of myself as a reasonably smart person. And that stops 10 minutes after I start talking to a security person.
Well, the interesting thing in the Wall Street Journal article, is it in the Wall Street Journal article? Yeah. So, is it in the Wall Street Journal article? Yes, it is in the Wall Street Journal article. So that Apple is trying to figure out how to move beyond the iCloud keychain in terms of and encrypt more of the data that's on iCloud so that the company could not respond effectively to a subpoena or a warrant, wanted to.
Even the thing that they said they could have done initially would not be possible, which is if you have the password to the account, we can get into the account for the backup.
Which they did do. I mean, they did do, but the last backup on this particular phone was 6 weeks old.
Right. And then they changed the password on the account. So then, and now they can't get into the phone to change the password on the phone so that then the phone will complete another backup.
Yeah.
So that's the hang up that we're in the middle of now. And they even said, like, if you had come to us sooner, we would have told you that and then it wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. Or if the phone was properly MDM, mobile device managed, and all sorts of stuff. But the point in the Wall Street Journal article is that Box.com in terms of creating an encrypted version of the service or an encrypted offering, it took them 3 years to build that without breaking stuff.
Yeah.
And I can tell you from the day job side as well, encryption is hard.
It's super hard. It's supposed to be hard.
It's supposed to be hard. But it's both from an architectural sort of here's the sequence of steps that's being used to generate the keys to make sure that the right people have the right keys and the keys can't be removed. There are things involved called hardware security modules, which live either on USB sticks or on servers, in servers, and that are mathematically provably impossible to retrieve the keys from. You will break them before you can pull the keys out.
Yes.
And those, like, that's the enabling technology, but the amount of work that goes into creating something around that is ginormous.
Absolutely, because then you also have to think about, like you were just talking about, like, how do you do this without making it ridiculously hard to use? How do you do this and still, what's the balance between what you need for security and what you need for convenience? Because eventually somebody's going to have to try and use this for whatever the service is, whether it's some sort of cloud service or just keeping something locally protected or communication from person to person in some form or another. And those are things that are really important. And you have to remember that at some point you have to introduce people into your amazing encryption equation. And that's when it gets really tricky. Like, if you thought it was tough before, now go hand this to a person and try to get them to use it.
Yep. It's not easy.
It's not.
It's not easy. So just to close the loop on that, the DCSS t-shirt apparently was written, the printout was in C. However, this is back in 2000, so a lot of these links have succumbed to bit rot. But the work of the professor who testified in the
DVD John,
not DVD John. No, it was the testimony of Professor Turetsky, David Turetsky from Carnegie Mellon, who testified in the case in 2000, and he had on his website, and still does to this day, a gallery of DC of CSS descramblers, all the different places online where prior to the case one could find this. And oh, my favorite, I mean, with commentary, like it's on a tie, it's a dramatic reading of the file. There's a musical version. There's DCSS the movie. There's ASCII art in the shape of a DVD logo. There's a haiku, a commentary on the situation, and a correct and complete description of the descrambling algorithm. Okay, I'm going to have to look at that. So there's a haiku. But my favorite is there's a GIF. So there's a picture of the... There's a picture of the code, three pages of pictures of the code. Now, that's not executable, so it can't be illegal, but certainly a human being could read it and type it into a text file, which and then compile it. So what would that be? I don't know. So fascinating. Yes, yeah, so there is how to decrypt a haiku, how to decrypt a DVD in haiku form. We will, of course, include that in the show notes. So all that to say, the Apple FBI thing, you know, one of the rare news stories that survives a fortnightly cycle on the after show that it happens and keeps on happening. It
just keeps happening.
But there's other great stuff. There's new stuff coming. There's new stuff coming.
I know. We've had an actual invite for the 21st.
Yay.
Very excited about.
How do we feel about this whole iPad Pro Mini thing situation?
Oh, I just... Okay, Mike, you've heard me say all this before because it hasn't happened yet. So, yeah, I'm not a person for rumors. I like to speculate. Like, wouldn't it be cool if they did this? But I'm not going to go looking for what's his name? Chris Rossin's favorite person from whatever KGI Securities. I'm not looking for that guy and, like, you know, taking his word as gospel. And I'm not looking for somebody who got it right 5 years ago who's still continuing to act like they can actually predict anything. So I like to just sort of wait and see. I think it's going to be fun. I think last year's event in the springtime, I believe, was the watch, because then we got the watch in April. So I think it's going to be the new watch, and I think it's going to be fun. And I don't know if we're going to get anything else. And I don't really care if we do. I'm mostly curious about the watch because Mr. Kelly has said the words Apple Watch to me a few times lately. And so I'm wondering what his interest level is going to be.
Harumph.
Yeah. And so, because he's like, I know better than to buy 1.0 from Apple. That's what he told me last year. Was, I don't want 1.0. I'm going to wait for 2.0 so they can figure out what they forgot and, you know, make the good one. And, you know, once it's better, then I'll buy the second one. So I'm excited to see what it's going to be. I did get a kick out of all the crazy Dalrymple based theories because it was called Let Us Loop You In. So
it's going to be a Heineken based iPhone.
I think it'll be Heineken colored Apple Watch bands is what it'll be. They'll be green. And then I liked that the fake Johnny Ive account posted a picture of the invitation and said, we own Dalrymple now. It was awesome. So I just think it's going to be fun to watch. I always like watching Apple events. I like to see, particularly as they've sort of settled into the new style where Tim is more of an MC and it's not all about one person on stage and that person is the CEO of the company. So it's fun to watch them take this new direction and try some stuff and see if it works. And, like, we'll get Eddie Q up there and he'll make some jokes about karaoke, and we'll get Federighi up there. We'll make a joke about his hairdo. And then, and then we'll get Phil Schiller up there to talk about the stuff. And, like, I've enjoyed watching how the events have evolved over the last few years, and it's been a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see what we're gonna get from the new one. I'm pretty sure it's gonna be the watch, personally. I don't know what else. I miss the old days of the One More Thing, but if we get more than the watch, I'll just be pleasantly surprised. What do you think?
I think it's going to be the Pro Mini.
Really?
The giant mini. Not mini, but the 9.7-inch Pro, iPad Pro.
We did just get an iPad, so that's why I'm wondering if...
Which iPad did we get other than the Pro?
The Pro's like all new.
The Pro is a giant.
It's a monster. I know.
It's a huge thing. The Pro is not for everybody, but the 3D Touch and the pressure sensitivity and the new hotness.
Yeah.
In a conveniently palmable form factor, I would be all over that.
Yeah.
So. I'm just saying, but I think we'll see some good new stuff. I'm looking forward to the iPad thing.
I would like to get a new mini. I would like for there to be a new mini, and it is because I would like to get a new mini.
That's very simple.
Because I don't have one, and part of the reason I don't have one is because the newest rev of the mini is basically the iPad Air in a teeny package, which is pretty awesome. Or the Air 2, the Air 2 in a teeny package, which is pretty great. So I'm interested to see, because it just seems like that's too close of an iPad for an iPad event to be to an iPad event. But that's just me.
Well,
and I'll probably just keep saying that until Tim walks out on stage with one. That's basically it. You
know? Right up to the moment where it happens. So we're at about the 42-minute mark, but... There's a couple things else we want to talk about. Oh, yes. There's one other thing I want to say, which is that there was news today that Apple is planning to move some of its cloud services off of Amazon Web Services and onto Google's cloud platform, which is fascinating to me.
Ooh.
I haven't seen this. Yes, it's in the thread. With the caveat that this may be a stopgap measure until Apple gets essentially all of its stuff on its own services. Apple currently uses a lot of Amazon Web Services, some of its own data center services, some Azure, and now apparently quite a bit of Google, or soon to be quite a bit of Google.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because last week there was quite a peck of Google. last week there was a story about how a Wired story about Dropbox moving its infrastructure off of Amazon and into its own data center operation. And that is I haven't even finished the article yet. That's how fascinating it is. I got halfway through and then I got interrupted. But it's good. It's good stuff. So if you care about clouds, you know, if clouds are important to you, check it out.
What's funny to me is that it sort of sounds like if Apple's bringing it in-house, they're taking it from a data center in Oregon to a data center in Oregon.
No, it may be a data center in Arizona.
Apple owns one here, and Amazon has a ginormous one here, and so does Google. And so that's why, like, if Apple takes it away from Amazon in Boardman, then they're either putting it on Google service in the Dalles, or they're taking it in-house in Prineville across the street from Facebook's data center. Because we have the space and the infrastructure for that kind of thing. Like the literal, you know how people talk about having the bandwidth for stuff? Oregon totally has the bandwidth for stuff.
Yeah.
So we do have, and those are just the four I know about. Apple, Google, Facebook. Because in fact, Apple bought, I thought this was, you talked about being halfway through that Dropbox article. This is the set of articles I thought was super fascinating about a year ago, I think, maybe a little less than a year ago, Apple not only bought a bunch of land here in Central Oregon for a data center, they also bought a hydroelectric plant so that they could generate their own energy for that data center through renewable sources. So I thought that was terribly interesting. And very forward thinking, and I'm curious how other companies are going to address things like this in the future. Companies like Amazon and Facebook and Google, who are doing a ridiculous amount of power consumption and what they're looking to do. And so I think that's going to be pretty interesting. And yeah, so there you go. That's excellent. My two bits on that. I want to talk about really quick two podcasts.
Okay.
And the reason for that is me, because I am on them. so one of them is, and I want to make sure I get it right. So I'm gonna make sure that I get the actual name of it. And it's Geek Trivia is what it's called. And it's basically a game show. And I was on it. I was on it last night. And it was nice. A lot of fun. Yeah. So we had a complete blast. There's like a few rounds of different styles of games and things. And it's super entertaining. So let me find the actual, it's the Twitter account is Trivia Geeks Show with two S's in a row. And they're super fun. We had a really good time recording yesterday. You can go see how much I won or lost by with.
no spoilers.
I was on with Adam Christensen of MacCast fame. He was the guest on the other team. So that was a lot of fun. And so you can check them out. It's a really good time. And the other one that I want to talk about is, and I'm super pumped about this, Jeff Gamet and I, in the olden days on the British Tech Network, we used to do a comic book podcast with two guys from the UK. And so it was sort of an hour of us telling each other about the comic books we used to read and the comic books we're reading now, because their experience as kids growing up and reading comics in the UK was very different than what we had here. And so they would talk about the stuff that they were super into, and we'd talk about the stuff we were super into. And we had, you know, as with all things, life got in the way, and we were never able to get that show back on track. And so now Jeff and I have decided to resurrect it ourselves, because about once a month for the last year or so, we've both kept going, I really want to bring back the comic show. I'm reading this thing and I really want to talk about it with you. So we're totally going to do that. And I'm super excited because we have a name and a website. And we're about to start recording shows, and it's called, are you ready? Are you ready for what it's called? Mm-hmm. Here's what it's called. Mixed Inks, Comics and Cocktails. So
wow,
we're going to take superhero themed beverage recipes, make them, and then drink them while we talk about comic books. It's going to be so much fun.
My God. Oh my God. Oh my God. That sounds fantastic.
It's going to be amazing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what.
Okay, I'm sitting down.
Tell you what.
I heard you're going to tell me what.
If you would like to have a guest for Mixed Inks, who is the illustrator and co-creator of the newly published graphic novel compilation of the indie comic The Only Living Boy, Mr. Steve Ellis, I can book him for you.
Ooh.
So I will make that love connection for you guys, for Mixed Inks to get Steve Ellis on the show. Happen. That's going to happen. It's happening.
I thought you were going to say the middleman and I was going to fall off my
chair. No, well, look, I mean, you don't want to blow your wad the first week. I mean,
that's true.
You want to ramp. You want to give the people something to look forward to.
We don't need to record with him now. I'm just...
No, but seriously, and this is normally the sort of thing we'd talk about after the show. But yeah, if you Steve and his wife Yamila are our old friends of the Rose Hoover household, and
so, hi Steve.
So now we've got a Steve Ellis mention. I will extend to him the invitation to be on your guys' podcast. Be amazing. And I'm sure he would be happy to do it.
And if anyone else listening is a comic creating person or can put us in touch with a comic creating person, please do so.
I know who your second guest is going to be. I can make this happen. Well, you could make this happen.
Who's my second guest?
It's going to be Megan Lavie-Heaton, writer of Namesake.
Yeah. She's already on my list. I made a list and she's on it already.
That you don't need my help for that.
No, that one I don't need to know. But yeah, so I'm super excited. We're gonna have the best time, and because we always did before, and I know a couple of people who told me specifically that they listened to the comic show because they could tell how much fun we were having, and it was just fun to feel like they were hanging out with us while we were having such a good time. And so I am super excited to get to do the new comic show. It's gonna be a lot of fun. So I hope you guys like it too, and I will let you know more about it as it becomes an actual thing and not just a website and a Twitter account once we figured out what the name was going to be. So there you go. Yeah. My big plan for St. Patrick's Eve is to get a bunch of the bar equipment out of the bar and arrange it like they're Avengers or something and take pictures so that we have something for the header on the website.
I think this is a beautiful thing. I'm very excited.
I don't know how I stand my exciting life either. There you go.
Well, we are very happy for the pending debut of Mixed Inks. You guys, you loyal listeners, can find Kelly soon at mixedinks.com. But in the meantime, over at themacobserver.com and on the Twitters at Verso. You can find me on Twitter at Mike T. Rose. And of course, you can find our show here at aftershowpodcast.com and on Twitter at @_aftershow. Anything else before we sign off for this week?
I want to hear about one more thing that you like real quick, because okay. I talked about a ton of stuff I liked. So yeah,
I am enjoying, I'll tell you what, I'm enjoying a new book. I'm enjoying a book, and this is of course when you catch me with no devices in hand. I'm enjoying a book that I just bought, and it's by the guy, it's by a writer for the New York Times. Let's see. Oh, I can find it very easily. I have to remember like where I saw it. Okay. So, he recently wrote a piece for the Times. He's a writer for the Times. The guy's name is Charles Duhigg, Duhigg. And the name of the book is Smarter, Faster, Better, The Power of Habit, about productive teams, productive habits, and I am not a productivity nerd. I'm not a productivity geek in that way. Not like some of our some of our friends and family. I'm talking about you, Brett Terpstra.
I aspire to Brettdom.
Yes, we all have a little Brett inside of us. But this was, when I was reading the piece, his essay in the Times, I thought, well, this is interesting. I am about less than a quarter of the way into the book, and I find myself highlighting every single paragraph. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. And it's the best kind of sort of nonfiction productivity porn kind of book, because it is telling me things. It is both affirming things I thought I knew and also completely surprising me on other fronts. So
that's awesome.
If you like that sort of thing, Charles Duhigg's new book, which you can find on a thing near you. There's apparently an article about how to fight with teenagers. Actually, my favorite thing about this article is that there's an article where the headline is "The Best Way to Fight with a Teenager," and a Twitter wag posted it with a one word comment of "knives," which I thought was great. I thought that was pretty good.
That's an excellent assessment. I like that.
That was a keeper. And I'm gonna watch the Cookie Monster thing again, because it was so good.
It was amazing. It's so much fun. It's so clever. It's just a delight.
Anywho, so we will be certainly notifying everybody when Kelly's new podcast launches. We will be back in a couple weeks for the after show. I am thrilled to say that I am finding our outro music. So we will see you in a couple weeks. Good night, everybody.